Yo, Chad, what if I told you there's a platform that could completely revolutionize your hiring strategy in a matter of hours?
Yeah, I'd call bullshit.
Well, it's not bullshit with AI for jobs powered by our friends at This Way Global.
Okay, I'm listening.
While everyone else is fishing in the same old talent pools, AI for jobs can source over 160 million diverse candidate profiles. This Way Global has established unique partnerships with over 8,500 trusted diversity partners.
So wait a minute. All of the hard on the groundwork is already done.
That's right, cowboy. You can discover 300 qualified candidates per job rec instantly.
Wow.
It's like having a candidate sourcing magic wand.
Dude, if you had a magic wand, you would have Mexican pizzas all day.
Stop distracting me, Sowash. AI for Jobs advanced matching algorithm analyzes past applicants using trillions of historical matching events and over 1,600 data points.
Now that is what AI should be doing, saving recruiters time on sourcing while they provide a white glove candidate experience.
Let's wrap this shit up. I'm hungry.
Listen up, kids. Revolutionize your hiring process today by jumping over to thiswayglobal.com and checking out AI for Jobs, where you can learn more about how to leverage AI for your recruiting instead of just writing poems and grocery lists.
That is thiswayglobal.com. We out.
You already know that Sovern makes the world's best resume CV parser. But did you know that Sovern also makes the world's best AI matching engine? Only Sovern's AI matching engine goes beyond the buzzwords. With Sovern, you control how the engine thinks. With every match, the Sovern engine tells you what matched and exactly how each matching document was scored. And if you don't agree with the way it scored the matches, you can simply move some sliders to tell it to score the matches your way. No other engine on earth gives you that combination of insight and control. With Sovern, matching isn't some frustrating black box, trust us, it's magic, one-shot deal like all the others. No. With Sovern, matching is completely understandable, completely controllable, and actually kind of fun. Sovern, software so human, you'll want to take it to dinner.
Hide your kids. Lock the doors. You're listening to HR's most dangerous podcast. Chad Soash and Joel Cheeseman are here to punch the recruiting industry right where it hurts. Complete with breaking news, brash opinion, and loads of snark. Buckle up, boys and girls. It's time for the Chad and Cheese podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Time to move fast and break shit, kids.
Number one Amazon bestseller in the house.
I didn't know you wrote a book.
Not me, my friends. Not me.
That's right. That's right, kids. We have Shannon Lucas and Tracy Lovejoy in the house. We're going to be talking about the book Move Fast, Break Shit, and Burn Out. I can't wait. First and foremost, Shannon has been an EVP at Ericsson, a senior innovation architect at Cisco. That's a hell of a title right there. And a director of innovation at Vodafone. Okay, Shannon, on the spot right now. What's your most proud moment, your most innovative moment at Vodafone? I mean, you were the director of innovation. So what's the thing that you hold up high?
I would have to say that it would be the work that we did in Africa using basic technology to sort of transform the medical industry and how we tracked drugs from supply chain to the end users in the rural communities.
Holy shit. Well, that's a lot better than I thought.
Yeah, ask and you receive.
I was thinking like, you know, I had this headset idea. It was really cool. It was cushiony and it was awesome. Yeah, okay. Well, then we have Tracy, who is an anthropologist. Believe that shit. And
Lovejoy.
Yeah. And the research engine
Lovejoy.
For Catalyst Constellations. She spent 12 years at Microsoft leading teams of change makers and co-founded the Ethnographic Praxis in Industry Conference. Now, is that really the name of the conference?
EPIC for short.
Oh, okay. But yeah, but you had to throw Anthographic in there so that idiots like us would never go to that conference. That's right. Okay. You've both authored this book called Move Fast, Break Shit, Burnout, The Catalyst's Guide to Working Well. Right out of the gate, softball question. How do you guys define catalyst?
To us, catalysts are people who are natural change makers, right? We played with the word change agent to figure out if that was the right path. But when you look at the literature around change agent, a lot of it is like how to become a change agent. We're talking about the people out there that either from birth or, you know, young age have this intuitive way of being in the world where they're taking in information, seeing lots of opportunities and possibilities, and can't stop themselves from moving to action to actually make that true. That's what a catalyst is to us.
Entrepreneur Magazine gave you the distinction of one of the 9 top books to read in 2021.
How awesome is that? Yeah, woo-hoo. Right?
Why do you think you're one of the 9 books that I should read? And it takes a lot to get me to read, folks.
Yeah, because you can't.
I'll jump in here. I would say because one of the other distinctions about how we think about catalyst is they are the people who help, you know, sort of are born future ready, if you will. There's a term called VUCA, which stands for volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous, which came out of the military in the 1980s to describe sort of the post-Cold War situation. And that VUCA, you know, reality has only sort of accelerated in the past decade since they came up with that term. And while organizations and entrepreneurs themselves have sort of been denying that new reality, 2020 was definitely the year where we saw what that looked like firsthand globally. And so I think it's really important for people to understand what it means to sort of arrive in the world VUCA ready to take on all of these challenges and find new and better opportunities out of them.
And I'll add, if you're an entrepreneur that's an innovator, you're too important to where we are today to get taken offline. And catalysts have cycles of burnout that really do just lay us flat out. And so if you don't have your operating manual of how you can sustain your energy, this is it. That's what we wrote. So to me, that's fundamentally why we think everybody who operates this way absolutely should check it out.
Curious, guys, writing a book is never like an easy decision. What was the genesis to put pen to paper and get this thing done?
For me, it was as soon as I started doing research with Catalyst, and it happened by accident, I knew that I was going to have to make the information available. I didn't know necessarily if it was going to be book writing or blog posts, but it was something that almost felt like it came through me. From the earliest time of doing interviews, I would watch these people have a space to talk about what their reality's been like and the challenges that they've experienced. And given my sense of personal purpose, it was going to happen in one way or another. So I don't have a better answer than that.
And was it 50-50 or is one writing more than the other? How does, like, I can't imagine, like, I do a podcast with someone else. Writing a book, I think, would be a nightmare. How did that work?
It was actually fun. It was a fun creative process because we actually deepened our thinking and continued to do research the entire time that we were writing the book. So we did, you know, multiple rounds of additional interviews with the people that we, you know, highlighted in the book. So, you know, it's not an easy process. And we also just we decided early on that done was better than perfect. And so, you know, we set a time goal for ourselves and it was just important to us that it got out there. And I would just add to the why that Tracy said, it became clear early on after the first couple of years of us launching the company that we needed to create a shared language and a shared context in order for us to be able to fulfill our mission, which is really to help identify and support catalysts around the world.
Who does this book help? Is it the individual? Is it the leader, the manager? Who does this book help to be able to focus on understanding what a catalyst is and how they work in or outside of an organization?
Millennials must love this thing.
The title helps. The original idea that we had was actually almost to write like a two-sided book, one for the individual catalyst and then one for the organizations or leaders or managers of catalysts. We tend to dream big and audacious, and we decided to dial that back for this first book. But there's definitely another book that we would like to put out there, which would talk to the organizations of the leaders about how to support them. So this first book is really to get the name out there and for the individual catalyst. But we have a lot of people who might not be Catalysts who are reading it, but as they read it, they're like, I know who these people are in my life now, and I understand, you know, how I can more effectively support them.
Joel and I are both Gen Xers, and that's probably the only label other than podcaster that we actually fit ourselves into. But I can just see all of the LinkedIn ninjas and the wizards. Now we're going to have to deal with all these people titling themselves as sales catalyst, marketing catalyst, DoorDash catalyst. I mean, are we just creating labels to create labels here? Or what problem does this solve, really?
That was good, Sawash.
Did we make your lives more difficult?
I don't know what it does for me. Help me here.
Well, do you identify as a catalyst?
That's a great question, because I'm sure we all know tons of people with great ideas. They can talk about innovation all day, but they move like sloths.
Yes.
And they couldn't execute if their lives depended on it. So
Totally.
The question is, what is the major factor of a catalyst? I would like to say, oh yeah, I'm a catalyst, but shit, what does that even mean?
Well, those are two really important and different questions that you've posed. The first being, you know, how is this helpful? And
right.
An unposed question of, you know, is it potentially not helpful, or you didn't say. And then the next part of, you know, what does it mean? So the what does it mean, because this is the book for catalysts, and this also answers the why is it helpful, is if this has been your way of being, most of the folks that find us have had an experience where it has ended up feeling really painful and lonely. And so having this named for them has been really, really important, mm-hmm. because they start to question, am I wrong? Am I broken? And so to have someone say, like, we actually see a subset of folks, and they have been written about in other places. But what's interesting in the writing is they're like, oh, there's, you know, 4% or 10% of the population are like this. But nobody has done the work to understand what really binds them and what's different. And yet there's this kind of common wisdom that they are the starters for us societally, right? If you look at, you know, the diffusion, right, of innovation, and it talks about these folks, or you look at leadership agility, it talks about these folks, and all of them end up talking to the masses about how you can be more like them, but it doesn't help the folks who are already like that. And we have really unique challenges that we face, and there are ways that we can be better. So for me, right, helping to write a book that actually optimizes the change making of our best change makers, I think that's an amazing opportunity for us, especially given the number of problems we have to solve today. Back to what Shannon was talking about, of the VUCA ready folks, like, let's amplify them, right? Let's empower them and help everybody get better as they're helping lead the charge. That's what it means to me.
So in most cases, when you feel like you are moving at light speed, you see a lot of shit that's happening around you. You see the dots and you're connecting the dots. But most of the people that you're actually talking with and dealing with on a daily basis, they can't even see the dots, let alone connect them, right? So what we're saying is those individuals, and I've had that feeling my entire life, those individuals really, I mean, can burn out fast, but they also have issues because it's hard to work within a team when they can't even understand what you're talking about a lot of times, because it's hard to articulate what's going on in your brain. How, as a leader, how do you identify that, and how do you help that individual? Because the last thing you want to lose is an individual like that, even though they're not fitting in. What do you do? How does that work?
I mean, the identification, as I mentioned earlier, when people are reading the book, as people start to understand, you know, the highlight of what it means to be a catalyst, their brain sort of naturally goes to those people in their life because they do stand out. They show up differently. We often get called, you know, get named monikers like troublemaker or disruptor, and not always in a positive sense,
yeah.
Especially if we're not self-aware. To Tracy's point, you know, part of the point of the book is to give the catalyst themselves the skills to be less disruptive, which doesn't mean stopping change. It just means doing it in a way that brings other people along more effectively. So it's not hard to identify them. We work with organizations, like, we can have surveys and self-identification tools, et cetera. one thing that Tracy and I talked a lot about early on when we started this work is, do we want to be the labelers of catalysts, or do we let catalysts sort of lean in and name themselves? And we came pretty heavily down on that second one. Like, if the word, even if you, all the attributes fit you, if being a catalyst doesn't resonate with you, then that's fine. And then I think there's a great question there about, you know, as a leader, how do we support them? Obviously, myself as a leader, I was a catalyst. And so I had to surround myself with people who could translate, you know, that had catalytic capabilities, but could also help me bring the rest of the organization along. And so intentionality is a word that we use a lot in all of this work. It's like, how can the catalyst be more intentional about the work that they're doing? But also, how can the leaders intentionally support them? Making sure that they're not spread thin chasing all of the new shiny projects or opportunities, but helping them to prioritize, giving them the surroundings and removing some of the barriers that might, you know, get in their way. And I think one of the key things from that perspective is psychological safety. Once once organizations recognize that they have these VUCA-ready people, they will send them on these heroes missions. Okay, go out into the world and figure out what we need to do next. And by definition, that's usually some kind of divergent thinking from the way the organization currently operates. So they go out, they do their vision quest, they come back. Hopefully, they can now clearly articulate their vision, but it could cause such cognitive dissonance for how the organization operates that either the idea gets attacked or the catalyst themselves gets attacked. So it's really then incumbent on the leader to help create a space of psychological safety to have healthy conversations about which pieces of that they're going to move forward with or not.
Yeah. And if they're truly catalysts, then if their idea gets attacked, they're being attacked.
That's what it feels like, 100%. It's almost a physical connection to that idea. That's right. And but it's interesting because catalysts generally, not universally, but generally don't go in with an agenda. You know, when they get brought into the organization or the team, or if they're entrepreneurs, they're really just sensing like, what's the next thing that needs to unfold here as the dots are connecting, as they're doing the sense making. It's not like it's their horse in the race until they are convinced and have the data, you know, that that is the right thing to do. And we can be arrogant about that. Let's own that. We can be arrogant that we can see the absolute right path to go down.
Right.
But I think it's important for people to remember that, you know, we're usually just in service of whatever positive change we think needs to come next.
Okay, listener, how can you help your employees become more productive? I have answers. How about automating manual and repetitive tasks, giving meaning to data, then allowing that data to actually drive decisions? And how about matching people to your jobs quicker?
Well, wait, the Chad and Cheese has a new LLM?
No, Cheeseman, I'm talking about TextKernel.
Ah, okay, that makes more sense. What I'm hearing is the groundbreaking concept of, wait for it,
yeah,
simplicity. Seriously, TextKernel cuts through the complexities like a tortilla chip through some hot nacho cheese.
Oh my God. Really? Nacho references already. Anyways, TextKernel brings efficiency and productivity to your operations. TextKernel seamlessly unifies your tools and data to drive efficiencies and success.
TextKernel is creating new opportunities for your recruitment journey. Kind of like adding guac to my barbacoa burrito.
Oh my God. How about extracting meaningful insights from data? I mean, that's something. Swiftly matching people with jobs, automating repetitive tasks. Who knew such advanced concepts were even possible in the land of human resources?
We did, Chad. We did. Dude, wrap it up. I'm a little hungry.
Imagine that. Okay, listener. Get ready to use today's tech to drive efficiencies and productivity. Visit TextKernel.com. That's TextKernel.com.
Nachos.
But it's so frustrating when nobody wants to come along for the ride.
It's so frustrating.
So
it's very frustrating.
painful.
The book talks about whether catalysts are born or made. Talk about that.
We don't know. We just simply haven't done the research. So I can tell you that in initial research where I was doing in-depth interviews, qualitative, a lot of the stories talked about this having been a way of being since childhood that they can remember. I didn't dig into, was that born? Were there events that happened? And I haven't yet met people who tell me like it came later in life, but I don't rule that out as a possibility that they had some experience that kind of forced them into that. In fact, in The Power of Habit, Charles Duhigg talks about that in terms of community change and habit, that there are community leaders who've had that. I don't know if those leaders would say, I became a catalyst. It just honestly hasn't been the question that I've been that interested in answering because there's so many different things that I keep going back to learn more about from our population. So I don't know.
We do have a gentleman that we highlight in the book, Michael, who he really pinpoints in his life what his catalytic moment was. And it's when he was, you know, young and in a car and a friend in the car died, not his fault, but it really precipitated great change in him. So there is a hypothesis that there might be some of those, you know, life altering moments. But to Tracy's point, we don't have the data yet.
Yeah, I think mine came in when I actually went into the military, because the military in itself really teaches and focuses on troubleshooting and looking for the dots so that you can, so that you can connect the dots. And I'm not sure that everybody kind of like absorbs that same learning, but I know then that's when mine hit. So really it's almost like there's a point where you finally get algebra.
Yeah. That's fascinating, because one of the things that I've played with, especially thinking about it from a research and teaching angle, Chad, is the one key attribute that I wonder that we can teach is the ability to take in lots of information. Mm-hmm. So that you're really connecting the dots. And so I've had a hypothesis untested of like, maybe that's the thing that people have naturally or not. But what you're telling me is that even that part can be taught, which is really compelling to me. So thank you.
I think it was almost how to pull the dots together. I was never a great student and I never understood why, right? But when I got into more of a structured scenario and they taught me how to take all of those inputs and then focus on execution, that was big for me.
But don't you think the catalyst was always in there? It just had to be sort of programmed or pulled out? I don't think you learned it. I think it was always there. Yes.
It might've been triggered maybe on how to take in the information, process the information and work. I mean, cause obviously my brain's all jacked up to be able to work it right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Easy on the Red Bulls there, killer. Easy on the Red Bulls. Guys, I want to pivot a little bit. When I read the name of the book, Move Fast and Break Shit, in particular, reminded me of Facebook. And I want to say that this was either sort of a programming mantra at Facebook early on where just move fast, build stuff, break shit, move on and keep going. And I think that was initially sort of a badge of honor for Facebook. And, you know, a few years hence, we found out that, well, if you're not thoughtful about this stuff, you know, Russians get involved, elections go awry.
Small things like that. Yeah.
That aren't necessarily positive. So I assume that both of you have a positive take on the move fast, break shit, or am I wrong on that?
The title definitely has a nod to Facebook for sure. And, you know, I'm coming from sort of the background of having been in Silicon Valley for the last 20 years. But the book is also about what happens when catalysts are unintentional. So I think a lot of people get hung up on, especially the catalyst. They're like, yeah, I want to move fast. Yeah, I want to break shit, but no, I don't want to burn out. And so they get confused. Like, are you advocating for burnout? We're like, no. In fact, we're not necessarily advocating for moving fast and breaking shit per se, you know, unto itself. What the contention is that if we are not intentional in what we are doing, we will do that mindlessly. We will move too fast. We'll leave people behind. We'll break shit without understanding what data or like sort of intentionally picking the processes or the things in the organization that actually need to bend or break. And then that all of that will cause resistance, which will then accelerate and sort of amplify burnout. And so the whole rest of the book, and that's the subtitle, is let's get the tools so that you can actually in some ways move fast faster by intentionally slowing down through some steps. You can break shit, but with intentionality so that it's actually in service of your vision and moving things forward instead of leaving people behind and having them get pissed off and frustrated. That goes back to the disruptor and troublemaker monikers that we get. And our contention is that we probably can't stop you entirely from burning out. We just move fast and shine bright, and that's our way of being. But we do know that there are ways that we can reduce the amplification and the frequency of the burnout, because the contention is, you know, a burnt out catalyst creates no change at all. An interesting point to that is it's often only when we point out how burnout gets in the way of creating change that catalysts, including myself, will actually start to embrace some of the methods for reducing the friction and burnout. We won't do it for ourselves in terms of a sense of self-care or self-worth, but we'll do it in a sense of service of the thing that we're trying to create.
Talk about that, because when it comes down to managing this, it is incredibly frustrating, as I'd said before, and as you know, that when other individuals can't see the dots, they can't connect the dots, and you can't really articulate the process in itself, what do you do? You know that the end point for you as a catalyst really is execution. If you can't do that front part, you can't get to the end, right? And that's where the major frustration comes. If you're at a point of leadership, obviously you could be a failed leader even though you see it all. And if you're a part of a team, you can't really be gelled in a team because they don't understand really the end of the means, right? On how you can get there, and the frustration just grows. So how do you manage that?
Shannon was alluding to this of that we struggle to, you know, self-care. I feel like I'm at war with the term self-care. It just, we will never do it if that's how we think about it. The paradigm of self-care is, you know, it's selfish. It is, you know, the last thing on my list. I can do it once a quarter. So the big switch is when you see the ability to make change, that you are an actor within that system, and that it doesn't happen without you participating, then you'll begin to make the switch, right? And so there's a super easy metaphor that people can use. And once you get it, you're like, how did I not see it before? Is thinking of yourself as a gas tank and taking the time to actually figure out what are the activities that take gas out of my tank. Like, oh my gosh, when I meet with Joanne every Tuesday, I am exhausted. And I've never noticed that before.
God, I hate her.
when I talk to Chad
when I have that team meeting, I'm always really energized. So it's bigger than just the activities we do outside of work hours. It's really getting clear on what is it that fills us and depletes us, and seeing ourselves as part of that vision that we're moving toward, and making sure that your time integrates activities that give you energy and take energy away. It sounds simple, but there's so much awareness you have to put into it that it does take time and intention.
And don't you have to also identify when a culture and an environment isn't good for you and you just got to get the fuck out?
Yep.
Totally.
100%.
We talk to people all the time. Our vision is to have, instead of like the top 100 places to work, like the top 50 or 100 catalyst friendly companies. It'll be an amazing, magnet for attracting high potential people, because there's a high correlation between catalysts and high potentials, and the amount of change they'll be able to create will be sort of unstoppable. I also, just to going back to the other point that you were making, you know, the bringing people along. So how do you reduce the resistance, which ultimately leads to the burnout that Tracy was sort of solving for? And there's an interesting thing here about emotional labor is really the word that comes up, because we need catalysts, because the impetus is on them. They're the ones that see the change, to help actually the organization go through the different stages of relationship through the change process, which is much like going through the grief process. And one of the most frustrating parts for catalysts about this is that we have to do a lot of the emotional labor for the organization. We have to do the handholding, not just to get people to see the vision, but to be comfortable moving through all of the steps to actually achieve that vision. And that's where a lot of the frustration comes. It's that's where that that frustration is like, why don't they see it and why don't they get it? But the impetus is not on the other people necessarily to do that emotional work.
How does the pandemic change the calculus? I'm guessing this wasn't something you thought of when you started the book, but it obviously probably came into effect as you were writing it. So we have more people working from home. We have more solopreneurs. We have more contract workers to navigate. There are a lot of things that are a little bit different in our world and will continue to be a difference. And how does that impact sort of your structure and your thesis on catalysts?
I don't know that the calculus changes or our thesis changes. Certainly, one of the things that Shannon and I are doing are collecting case studies because catalysts have been on fire during the pandemic, right? If there was ever a time that people needed to be out there helping solve problems, my goodness, this is it. And it's amazing to watch those that have become part of the community have that opportunity to do that. What has changed that you're pointing to that's not about our calculus is the burnout rate globally is so intense, right? Yeah. Mental health
we're
is
never
so
shut
challenged.
Off, right?
Never shut off. And we are disconnected, as I talked about those activities that fill us, we're disconnected from a lot of those activities, including human connection, which is like the heart of how we thrive, most of us as human beings, even as introverts. And so catalysts aren't separate there. And so when we, are in community with folks, we have an online community, that's something that we address a lot. It's a tough time for all of us.
One of the things that I thought about when I asked the question as well is you guys talk a lot about delegation in the book and the importance of, passing on work to relieve stress on you to, counteract burnout. How do you think work from home and being virtual impacts delegation? I personally feel like it's harder to delegate when you're not in a face-to-face situation.
I would say that could certainly be true. One of the tools that, we can even talk about how we run our company. One of the tools that we talk about is once you have your vision, getting really clear on what the strategic priorities are, and then actually making a priority list and tracking your time against that and having a not right now list as well. And so we try and sort of walk the talk as we're doing that. And when we get the crisper that we get on the actual activities that are supporting us achieving the vision, the more bound they are, actually the more capable we are of delegating those. And Tracy and I personally, Tracy has two kids at home. We have a bunch of kids at home. So we've been living this experience along with everyone else. And we've just gotten every quarter, honestly, clearer and clearer on when our tanks are getting low and we need to delegate things. So I think it's a very relevant conversation. I don't know for myself if it's harder. I think it's more necessary now because of all of the demands that are put on us. Tracy, what do you think?
Yeah, I love the question, Joel. It's really making me reflect and I'm diving less into research and more into coaching conversations because it's where I spend a lot of my hours each week. And delegation is definitely a thing, but because catalysts really, think about solving a problem, I do see a lot of intentionality in the time of now, and we're working from home, of thinking about the structure of how work's getting done. And so I see less of a problem for leaders in delegating because they'll get there as they figure out what's this new system? What's today versus what's going to be sustained for a few weeks? How do I solve for the reality of it? How do I, not help my people burn out? But you brought to mind a place that is different for catalysts. And that's actually the opposite of leaders. It's when we're in physical spaces and we're not included in the meeting we know we need to be in to be able to help affect change, we can kind of get the room, right? And show up. But in the age of Zoom, if you don't have the link, this is actually much harder. So I'm seeing where it's sideways, influence or moving outside of my organizational influence where catalysts are struggling a bit more than the delegation and going straight down.
I'll let you out on this, and I kind of want to piggyback on the delegation topic. Chad and I talk a ton on the podcast about automation, about how, repetitious recruiting tasks will be automated, searching for candidates, interviewing, pre-screening, how all that will be automated. In your world or where you're coming from, is automation it seems like that would be extra gas for a catalyst, right? If I can move off some of this minutia of my everyday and focus on kicking ass,
yes,
and breaking shit. Like, that's a good thing. Yes. Am I thinking about that correctly or not?
100%. And actually, yes, we just, there's a compendium book that I think everyone else should read, which is The Adaptation Advantage by Chris Shipley and Heather McGowan. And this is exactly what they're talking about. They're talking about the impact that automation is going to have on the future of work. And their contention, rightly, is the more human the job is, the more human skills that are required, the more valuable it's going to be. And what's interesting is in years past, Catalysts have had a real challenge explaining what their superpowers have been or are. And that's why we lean into VUCA so heavily, is because it's a context that people can start to get their heads around that has all of those soft skills, which are like the creative thinking, the signal through the noise, the dot connecting, the, you know, we ignite cultures, we become the evangelist for things and get people on board. Like all of those discreetly, the emotional, the empathy that we bring to the table, the emotional intelligence, all of those things that it might happen someday, but it'll take a long time for the, you know, the automation to catch up with that. So 100%, we, like, from a personal experience, the more that I can automate or, you know, sort of outsource some of those more repetitious jobs, the more engaged I am in the creative thinking and problem solving work.
Excellent. Well, Shannon Lucas and Tracy Lovejoy,
ow,
Move Fast, Break Shit, Burnout, The Catalyst's Guide to Working Well. I would assume I can just go straight to Amazon right now, buy the book. Did you guys also do the Audible on this? Have you done the Audible yet? Tell me you voiced the Audible.
We have not released the Audible yet.
Not
on the
yet.
Horizon.
Yes.
Right? I know.
I expect you both to be on the Audible version. But until then, if people want to find out more about you, find out about the organization, the book, where would you send them?
To find out more about the book, absolutely hit Amazon. Up there, grab it. And to learn more about us and what we do, go to catalystconstellations.com. And you can learn all about the ways that we support Catalyst, from having online community. We have courses that are bringing folks together, offer coaching and mentoring, lots of ways to come together and explore your catalyticness in the world.
And don't forget movefastbreakshit.com. I love that.
Nice.
That is nice.
We out.
Woo! Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to, what's it called? A podcast. The Chad. The Cheese. Brilliant. They talk about recruiting. They talk about technology. But most of all, they talk about nothing. Just a lot of shout-outs of people you don't even know. And yet, you're listening. It's incredible. And not one word about cheese. Not one. Cheddar. Blue. Nacho, Pepper Jack, Swiss. So many cheeses, and not one word. So weird. Anywho, be sure to subscribe today on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That way, you won't miss an episode. And while you're at it, visit www.chadcheese.com. Just don't expect to find any recipes for grilled cheese. So weird. We out.
How much do you understand the future of finance? I'm Jim Roos, a top 10 banking influencer and host of the podcast Banking Transformed, where we dive deeply into the rapidly evolving world of banking and financial technology. Join me as I interview industry experts, thought leaders, and innovators as they unravel the latest banking trends, disruptions, and game-changing technologies reshaping the world of finance. Redefine your understanding of the banking ecosystem. Subscribe now to Banking Transformed, available wherever you get your podcasts, and now available on YouTube.